Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Hello and welcome to Game On with Marie Crowe. Coming up on the show, Double Delight for Dublin. We'll talk to Johnny McGee, Ray Cosgrove, Stephen Rochford, Niamh Kelly and Orla Farmer about all the football action. Alan Cawley is in to reflect on another eventful weekend of Premier League. And bronze medalist at the World Championships, Ellen Keane, will join us to talk about her heroics in the pool. You can get in touch by texting us on 51552 or on Twitter at Game On. Now, guys, you're very welcome to the studio. I'm joined by Johnny McGee, Ray Cosgrove, Alan Cawley, and on the line is Orla Farmer and Niamh Kelly. Johnny, to you first. You saw your daughter walk the steps of the Hogan. How proud are you?
Yeah, extremely proud. It was a nice moment to see her doing 3 in a row, particularly where her first year involved, they were beaten by Cork, and that was on the back of being beaten by Cork 3 times in a row as well. So it was nice to see them so happy at the end. So I was a bit nervous with the conditions. You know, it was very tough for both teams. And credit to both teams. Look, they stuck to it and kept going, you know.
Right, you know Lauren as well. Is she like her dad any bit?
She is, which is the mental attitude of her father. She's very, I won't say stubborn, but she's very, very driven. But she has, I have to be honest, she has the athleticism of her uncle Darren.
So. that's a positive, isn't it, Ray? That's a positive.
Yeah. What are you trying to say, Ray?
Yeah, might be the athlete, but the football ability came from me now.
So she's got the right mix of genes then.
Exactly. Yeah.
Alan, did you watch the match?
I did, yeah. I was just saying to Johnny off air, like, it was really tough, the conditions. And when you consider just 24 hours prior to that, how lovely it was, us all in watching the men's final. It was really tough on the girls, the weather wise. But yeah, there's some team, like, I'm very impressed with Mick Bowen as well. Anytime I hear him speak, and he seems to have them well driven, almost carbon copy of Jim Gavin type thing. So yeah, it's brilliant for the girls.
Orla, it wasn't the game that we were hoping for, to be honest about it. We were looking for a bit of free flowing football. We didn't get that at all. We only got 2 points in the first half, but at the same time it was pretty intriguing all the same.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, like, the conditions probably didn't help, you know. It did slow down the game a small bit, but in saying that, you know, credit to both teams. They both fought hard and they did the best they could, really, despite the conditions. But no, it was a fantastic, you know, weekend, particularly for Dublin. You know, making history in Croke Park is always nice, and also the attendance as well is fantastic, to see 56,000, you know, for ladies football in Croke Park. Fantastic.
Niamh, you know, we were watching the match and there was 2 scores at half time. I was kind of half wondering where the scores were going to come from. Were you worried that we were going to have an even lower score than we had?
Yeah, we were just saying that there. I suppose, you know, as a lot of them have said there, the conditions probably played a huge part in this yesterday. But, you know, fair play to both teams. They really dug deep and, you know, they battled it through. But you could see the both teams, they definitely had their homework done. Like, you could see both Galway and Dublin, they played very defensively in the first half. So I think that's what kind of created that as well. But there's a few scoring chances there that probably weren't converted in the first half either. But Sinead Goldrick snuck in well there in the, I think it was the 20th minute there to get a lovely goal. So I suppose that was a huge boost to Dublin going in at half time as well. And yeah, I could have, I thought, I was a little bit worried at half time that it would be a very low scoring game. But yeah, it was, you know, they dug deep and they're doing very well.
Niamh, you know Galway so well, haven't played them so often. Was there anything that they could have done differently, or where did they disappoint you, I suppose?
Yeah, I suppose against us, Galway, you know, since our game, which was 3 weeks ago, I actually felt, looking at it, they have improved dramatically on their defence. And, you know, they'd tactically challenged Dublin yesterday, I thought. And, you know, I suppose they had a few scoring chances that on other days they may have converted. But, you know, they might be looking back and reflecting on it and thinking, you know, if they got the scores in the first half, they might have been going in differently at half time and it may have, you know, changed the game a little bit. But yeah, fair play to them though. They really put it up to Dublin, and you know, you could really see, I suppose, the strength and depth in the Dublin panel. When, you know, you see the likes of Noel Healy coming on from the bench, and that definitely gave Dublin a huge boost, you know, seeing the likes of her caliber coming on. So yeah, I know Galway will be distraught now after that, I'm sure, but you know, they've a lot to learn as well, and give them huge experience now playing the All-Ireland final there in Croke Park.
Johnny, as a father sitting there watching that first half of football, were you getting frustrated?
Just a small bit, yeah. I just found that the tactics of both teams was excellent. I felt that the way both teams set up, it was a war of attrition. You could see where both teams had a matchups and they were going after their particular game plan. For I felt that the strength and depth with Dublin Tolan in the second half, I just felt that the lads or the girls, stuck to their tasks. You know, recycle the ball. You can see the traits of the lads in some of the girls and some of their playing in the second half. But it was war of attrition.
Ray, you've been there in Croke Park. Conditions aren't great. How difficult is it to hit the target when it's like those conditions are coming in on top of you?
Yeah, no, I was just talking to Johnny on the way in, and I think he was saying that Dublin were averaging 180 in a game prior to yesterday. And when you think, you know, they only had a couple of scores on the board, you know, Sinead's goal up until half time, it just tells you how difficult the conditions were. You know, they were the ball was like a bar of soap, and in fairness, you know, their skill set was shown by, you know, how accurate they were with their kick pass and their handling. But in all fairness, you know, to go and win three in a row, having lost three previous finals, it's a magnificent feat. And it just shows the character of the girls that they can bounce back and put three in a row. So now, you know, they're chasing the Cork girls now, and they keep driving on from here.
Orla, you're very familiar with three in a row and five in a row and, you know, 10 and 11 seasons, but do you think that there might be a bit of a gap developing now between Dublin and the rest of the pack?
Yeah, well, I suppose, like, you know, playing Dublin over the years, you know, there wasn't really that much between the teams, and, you know, like, you did even see yesterday the hunger and the drive coming from Dublin, and I suppose that heartache from losing over the years too really came through yesterday on the pitch. But in fairness, the credit to Dublin, like, you know, they've been fantastic the last few years, it's raising the profile for ladies football, and it's, you know, putting it up to Cork, the Galways, the Monaghans, you know, all the rest of us as well. So, you know, credit to them, like, absolutely credit to them.
Niamh, at the same time, when you look at Galway, okay, they only got four scores, but they still had a really decorated, successful, skillful Dublin team to five scores, which was an achievement in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, absolutely. You could, you know, you could definitely see that they'd done their homework. Like, there was some very good matchups yesterday. Credit to them. You know, Dublin are, you know, they're up there. They've raised the standard of ladies football hugely, and, you know, Galway really did stick with them. You know, I suppose the yellow card, you know, it was a huge blow for them as well. And I think straight away Dublin kicked back with another goal. So, like, you know, it was theirs to play for. And, they've done well, but, you know, Dublin are just a step ahead.
I know that you want to see them going on even now and doing four, five, six in a row. But, like, do you think they're a little bit far ahead?
Yeah, you can see that they're really marrying the men's teams, you know, like, you have. They pay attention to detail with everything they do, but, you know, as Orla said there, during the championship, there's been nothing really between the teams, and, you know, I suppose they've just showed that little bit more class. You know, they've paid attention to detail, and under the conditions as well, you know, they really kept their cool and everything. And, you know, I suppose at the minute, yeah, they probably are that little step ahead of everybody else, but
the challenge is over to you now. Johnny, when Lauren started playing football, like those early days and even those first few appearances in Croke Park, did you ever think you'd come to a time where she's playing in front of 56,000 people and probably a figure that will rise in years to come?
Yeah, absolutely not. I remember the reason why Gaelic football started, or for ladies football started in Kilmacud, was because through my mother and other mothers who had daughters who were going to matches watching their brothers play. And at the time when the ladies finals were in Croke Park, they couldn't give the tickets away. And to fast forward to now and seeing my own daughter be a part of that bit of history with the club and playing in front of 56,000, it was amazing. And look, I'm a father of four girls, so look, I'm delighted the way it's going. The 2020 initiative is massive, so look, yeah, I'm going to be very biased in terms of how it's going for ladies.
Ray, something that struck me yesterday as well, looking at that Dublin team, you have Lindsay Davey playing since 2004. You've Siobhan McGrath, who's playing there since 2003. Like, how unbelievable is it for them to give that commitment? I know Siobhan was away for a little while, but for so many years to the cause.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I know Siobhan had a massive game in the semi-final as well, and to back it up yesterday was fantastic. But it just shows you, like, there's been a good changing of the guard over the years, and to keep coming back, you know, they've had lots of different managers over the years. You know, Mick, Ken and Paul Casey have come in over the last couple of years and they've put their own slant on things. You know, they've got them, you know, three in a row, and that's due to the commitment levels that the girls are putting in. You know, the girls are working just as hard as the fellas now at this stage. I watched them train a couple of weeks ago up in Ballyboden, and you know, I was so impressed by their athleticism, their skill set. The game has really moved on the last couple of years. As Johnny said, you know, the attendances, you know, I can remember watching games and there was only a handful of, you know, people mm-hmm. watching the games, but to have 56,000 people in there watching there, just it's a credit to the association. And also, you know, you have to pay compliments to the girls. People are coming out to watch it because it is of an extremely high level. So yeah, you know, I'm involved with my young ones under 13 team down at Ballyboden, and you know, I think there were 400 girls from Ballyboden went in yesterday. That just shows how attractive the game is at the moment for young girls.
Niamh, I interviewed Siobhan McGrath ahead of the All-Ireland final, and we just spoke about the development of the game and how much it evolved since she started playing back in 2003. And she made the point that there is a bit of a responsibility on the players as well to be fit, to be fast, to be strong, to be playing good football, because when you're looking at the football product, we're looking at the players like you and what you're doing, and you know, you're the one selling tickets. Do you kind of agree with her that there is a responsibility on you to be the best that you can be?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, players have to buy into it as well, and you know, it's not just about, I suppose, the resources and everything that are there, but you know, players need to take that personal responsibility and, you know, have the right attitude and, you know, apply themselves. You know, they really need to want to do it, I suppose. So yeah, definitely I would agree. You know, it's becoming a personal, you know, responsibility now as well. So, you know, I know that the ladies' Gaelic, it has come on so much in the last number of years. You know, you can see, you know, the huge push that LDFA, you know, they put in to try and get the attendance out yesterday, which is great. But definitely comes down to, you know, your personal responsibility at the end of the day and whether you want to do it or not.
Orla, you would have seen it over the years as well. Like, you had that brilliant team to follow in the footsteps, the girls that were playing for such a long time. And I suppose even though they were winning 4 and 5 in a row, nobody really knew who they were. Have you seen much change in how football is viewed since you started playing?
Yeah, I suppose I started back in 2010. You know, the likes of Juliet Murphy now in Breach Cork, Irina Buckley. And I suppose because the game has, you know, the standard of the game has risen in the last 2 years particularly, you know, as Niamh was saying, you know, it is a personal onus on the player as well, you know, with strength and conditioning and nutrition. It's kind of what you're doing off the pitch as well. Like, it is a big commitment in that sense. And I think because every other team is taking it on board as well, you know, it forces you to push on a bit as well. So it has, in terms of strength and conditioning and looking after yourself, both on and off the pitch, I think over the last few years, it's definitely deemed as really important. Just also, you were talking about the attendance. I actually remember playing in 2012 against Kerry in the All-Ireland final, and I think there was 16,000 at that game. You know, so to think that even in the last 6-7 years that number has tripled almost, is just it's fantastic, and it just goes to show, you know, the work that the LGFA and the likes of Lidl and sponsors and things have been doing to promote ladies football at grassroots level as well, but also for players at an elite level, you know, like us when we're playing. And, you know, it encourages us to get the best out of ourselves then as well.
And Niamh, I guess the next step really is to try and get people going to the quarters. I know there was 10,000 at the semis and to other championship games as well and league games all year round.
Yeah, definitely. Like you were saying there, 56,000 people is massive. And, you know, I think they were saying it's only 2,000 short of the attendance at the Women's World Cup this year. So, like, that is a huge step for ladies football, but hopefully more people will start coming out to the quarter and semi-finals too. And, you know, there were some great performances in the championship this year, and, you know, it'd be great if we had better crowds. But definitely, I think, you know, the crowds have become more knowledgeable and, you know, more interested in ladies sport now. So hopefully that the figure can keep coming up now.
Johnny, the girls there just meant like preparation behind the scenes, you know, the S&C and that. But I interviewed Lauren a little while ago, actually. We were talking about her diet and she said she puts so much into preparing her own food. Do you see that at home, what she does?
Yeah, she doesn't trust me to cook it anyway. So, yeah, no, in fairness, look, she puts a lot of work into it. Even like on Friday there, she was watching a video of what she was supposed to do or who she was picking up for yesterday. So, you know, the hours that goes into it is the same as what the lads are doing in the gym, you know, their diet, their preparation, their sleep, it's gone to the next level, and I think they enjoy it. They want to push themselves, and I think, you know, ladies sport in general is on an upward curve, and I think the support of the sponsors, they've you know, Lidl, AIG, all of the 2020 initiative plays a massive part in what's going on at the moment. And look, I'm only delighted and very extremely proud of what she's done and achieved. And you know, she's still only 22 years of age. I still look at her as a kid, like. So
how involved do you get, Johnny, in terms of the experience that you have? Like, would she come to you for advice or discussions? Or
she would ask my opinion on certain things and how she would perform, and like, I'd be very honest with her, like constructive criticism, and very similar to when my father with me. So I'd always get a very honest opinion to her. Would never kind of, you know, if she go against what her manager or coach would instruction give her, I would never say don't listen to him. I think it's very important that she trusts in the coach and the managers that she's been involved in. And you know, that's still probably the hardest part for me, being like, I've played and coaching, to not kind of say no, you shouldn't listen or whatever. But she has to find that out for herself, and you know, give her a bit of guidance when she comes. I'll give her a bit of advice, and then she'll tell me quite quickly then she doesn't want my advice as well. So
so you have the father-daughter relationship down to a T then.
Yeah, definitely.
Ray, Lauren's only 22, but I think we should mention Hannah O'Neill yesterday, who started when we weren't expecting her to, and then to go and score a goal and an assist was pretty amazing at 18 years of age.
Yeah, I know Hannah. I watched her over the last couple of years with Foxtrot Cab, and I was delighted, you know, for her to get on the end of the pass from Lindsay to get a goal. And like, that's a memory that she'll cherish for the rest of her life, you know, at 18 years of age, scoring a goal in Croke Park. You know, it's a childhood dream fulfilled. But like, she's a very bright future ahead of her. You know, she's had a lot of success with Foxtrot over the years, but like, she can look forward to many more, you know, big days out in Croke Park, and hopefully a lot more success.
One of my standout memories from yesterday's game was when she did score the goal. She gave the thumbs up and a little bit of a wink. It was great. I think it was on a few of the papers as well. It was brilliant to see. So Niamh, Orla, what's the plans for 2020? When does pre-season start and all that? Niamh first.
So I suppose we'll get back to it now after a few weeks, and start, I suppose, looking at new girls to come in as well. And there's a few of us off to Australia this year, but there'll be, you know, a lot of girls in now this year again, training hard to try and make the panel. But you know, this year has been great, really. It's been a massive learning curve, and I think we've learned a lot really from the year ahead. So you know, hopefully we'll keep learning and make the same progress next year. But looking forward to the year now.
You've a busy year ahead, so then
heading off in October now, but yeah, really looking forward to coming back then for the championship and to see what the progress the girls have made, and you know, we'll still stay in contact and stuff like that. So yeah, really looking forward to it now, but can't wait for the season to begin.
And Orla?
Yeah, similar to me of now, just, you know, a few weeks time back to pre-season, and I suppose kind of just reflect upon the year as well, and always looking for new young players as well, like, you know, as you mentioned, like Savannah O'Neill now, like, coming in, and I suppose it's trying to inspire the youth and encourage the youth to come in too. Looking forward to the break also, but to be fresh and hungry now for championship and for the league next year as well.
Excellent. And even Orla, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Johnny, we're seeing so many girls heading off now to Australia to go and play in the AFL, the women's AFL. Would, if Lauren just came to you and said, look, I want to give it a go, how would you feel?
If she came, I'd say go ahead. Like, she, I'm surprised that none of the Dublin girls haven't been approached for whatever reason. Now, I don't know if Mick Bohan has put the claps on that to prevent that happening, but I'm surprised that some of them haven't got the call. But yeah, look, if the opportunity arose for Lauren to go, I'd tell her to jump at it, you know, to experience that at such a young age, you know. And like, the girls who have gone over have done very well, you know, and they can only speak highly enough about how they find it playing the Australian rules. And I think I encourage kids to go and play different sports, because it teaches them the different aspects of, like, soccer teaches spatial awareness and pressing up and all that kind of stuff. So it actually enhances their performance, I feel, for different sports going forward, you know.
And the good thing about it as well, that when they come back, they can play championship. Ray, would you be of the opinion as well that now that they have this opportunity, so many of them going over, that they should just grab it with both hands?
Absolutely. No, I've heard a rumour too that there's a couple of the girls will be going over maybe for a 3 month time span during the winter. So yeah, watch the space to see what develops. But you know, I'd be totally advocating, you know, the girls going out, you know, learning, living in a new environment. You know, what you learn from those cultures over there can only make you a better person. You know, athletically, you know, you come back as a better person as well, you know, physically stronger. So yeah, I think it's a no-brainer that, you know, amateurs get a chance to go over and perform as professional athletes. You know, you'd be crazy not to take the opportunity if it was given to you.
I think the rate, I think, Marie, that women's sport is progressing, obviously, both the Gaelic, obviously you see it with the women's soccer at the moment as well. There's so many opportunities now for young kids, which probably wasn't there maybe 15 years ago, young girls in particular. And it might get to the stage where they might not even have to go to the AFL because there's so many opportunities here now on their doorstep, both soccer, Gaelic, all sorts, because to see 56,000 at a women's final is just unbelievable. You look at the stuff going on in England in terms of the women's football, there was 35,000 at Man City, Man United last. I know it's different, kind of the resources they have, but just you see the Women's World Cup, just the progression and the rate that it's kind of the speed it's going at, it's unbelievable, really.
Yeah, and there's clear pathways for people who do want to go. Right, it's time for a quick break. We'll be back shortly to talk about the men's football final.
Two.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. So say bye-bye to shave irritation and razor bumps. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome back to Game On. Marie Crow here. I'm joined by Ray Crosgrove, Alan Cawley and Johnny McGee in studio, and Stephen Rochford is on the phone. Stephen, the five in the row is done. Dublin won it. What were your thoughts on the game?
Good evening, guys. I thought it was a fabulous game. I think that the first half had anybody in the stadium and probably watching at home really glued to their seats. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a first half of football where the shooting was just like it was nearly like William Tell. Every shot was on target. Dublin's efforts as regards scoring 117 from play. You know, just total control then into that second half, and I don't think, although even Kerry brought the game back to, I think maybe a point at one stage, I never felt that Dublin were going to, you know, lose a grip of the game, and then obviously I think that the stamp on that level of authority was shown in the Paul Mannion point where they held onto the ball for 30 plus passes for nearly 3 minutes, and it just sort of was a fitting glimpse of the way Dublin has sort of gone about, you know, one of their main traits is their ability to retain possession, grind teams down, even, you know, no matter what they put up against them, and it was just, you know, it was a great occasion to be there, and they deserve all the plaudits that they receive following us.
What do you think that Kerry could have done differently, and Peter Keane done differently, Stephen?
To be honest, I think Kerry still did a lot of things right. I think that they, you know, if you look at half time, you know, we had a level game at the 10 points apiece. I think there was certain elements that happened in the game that Dublin made more of. Like, so you look at obviously Owen Merchant's goal. Tadhg Morley had a similar opportunity, but didn't get the goal away from it. And the Stephen O'Brien effort that Stephen Cluxton saved, maybe that was squared. So Kerry still continued to create enough chances, but I still always felt that no matter what they were going to be throwing at Dublin that second half, they were going to be able to deal with it. And certainly when you had a forward line whereby Kieran Kilkenny was back to his 2018 commanding scoring rate, and Paul Mannion and Conor Callaghan, you know, being a real, real threat inside. I don't know there was really much more that Kerry did. Like, I mean, they won 100% of their kickouts. Yeah, there may be an argument to say that, you know, should they have pushed up a little bit more on the Dublin kickout. But there wasn't too much. Like, that whole argument is based on the Dublin defence giving those three opportunities to Sean O'Shea. And they limited those to maybe only three or four in the whole game. And in that sense, it became a lot more difficult. But I think you know, Kerry did as best they could, to be really honest, and that really this is more about what Dublin did and what they did really well that we should be focusing on.
Ray, we had you in after the drawn game. You didn't enjoy it all that much, but you must have enjoyed Saturday.
Absolutely. No, I even brought the kids in to experience the occasion because, you know, history was going to be made. You know, I felt, you know, after the last days here, I felt if they got 15 players in the field, Dublin were going to kick on and win the game. So, you know, from the get-go, Dublin were fantastic. They got out of the traps early. As Stephen alluded to, the three lads played absolutely fantastic. You know, their accuracy was sublime. But that was the big difference. You know, they came out of the traps good and early. Their game plan was to go hard at Kerry. I think it was the first time after the first quarter that Dublin had led in the 7 All-Ireland finals that they'd played in. So, and even afterward, about 5 minutes, they had 5 scores from play, which is more than they scored in the previous semi-final. So Dublin had learned a great deal from the previous game. And it just shows the work and effort that Jim and the rest of the backroom team put into preparation for the game. They knew that, you know, if they got their matchups right, that, you know, they'd be in a much better position to go on and kick on and make history. But yeah, you know, getting back to the point that, they, you know, 135 years waiting for a team to win 5 in a row, I think, you know, everybody can now say that, you know, they've witnessed the greatest team that ever played the game, you know, and it's brilliant that myself and Johnny can sit here and, you know, we would have, you know, soldiered with, you know, whatever, for the management team and played alongside some of these guys, and these guys are going to go down as immortals in Gaelic games. And I'm just delighted that I can say that, you know, I played alongside a lot of those guys, and you know, no disrespect to the Kerry team of the late 70s, but this team, you know, and all the records that they've broken over the years, this is the greatest football team that we've witnessed.
Johnny, do you think that these Dublin players get enough respect outside of Dublin?
I get a fair bit of respect, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff being shown in relation to funding and everything else. Like, the lads have showed at different stages over the last 5 years how they're at the managed situations and being put to the pit of their collar. You know, the drawn game where they were going into injury time, point down, still able to have the composure to push up, leave 4-on-2 inside, Clucko covering Tommy Walsh, and still Kerry couldn't get out of a half for at least go to 7 minutes. Just shows the game intelligence that these lads are at. So yeah, look, I think it was extremely fortunate for this generation of Dublin football, you know.
Ray, like, it's realistically not that long since you played for Dublin yourself. How has Dublin football evolved since this kind of golden generation came on the scene?
Well, I suppose if you only go back a decade, Marie, you know, we got hammered by Kerry, and the advancement from then, you know, to see where we are today in this short period of time, you know, they've won 7 All-Irelands in a decade. No other team has ever done that in the history of the game. You know, it's a phenomenal achievement. And when you think of Jim's record, you know, only having lost one game, you know, to Donegal, it's absolutely outstanding. I don't think this group of players get the credit that they deserve. You know, as Johnny mentioned, there's a lot of talk about funding and everything else that goes with it. This group of players are individually some of the best players that will ever play the game. And I suppose it's not until we look back and you look at the, you know, I won't single out any guys, you know, that's one for the, you know, the high stool. These guys are phenomenal. And, you know, the average age of the 14 outfield players was 26 years of age, Marie. This team isn't going away in a hurry. You know, if you keep adding one or two players, the 20s are beaten in the All-Ireland final this year. You know, they're going to be around for a long time to come. You know, there might be a change in the guard. You know, some fellas might move on, but it's going to be freshened up. And Jim has done that, you know, going back over 5 years. He's introduced new guys. You know, fellas forget that Owen Merchant started in last year's All-Ireland final, but was parachuted in on Saturday. You know, that's the strength and depth that the guys have at their disposal. I know they went back to the tried and tested with, you know, some of the older crew and Keane, Dermo, Philly, coming on the last day. But certainly that'll be freshened up. I'm sure now when the squad gets back together, there'll be young guys chomping at the bit to stake a claim.
Stephen, just given your involvement with Donegal and 2020 being around the corner as well, how does that sound, knowing that team are going to be freshened up and there'll be new players coming in and that their average age is only 26?
Yeah, a cold sweat rolls down my back. but the first thing, just what Johnny and Ray says, that I can guarantee you that from my experience in a Mayo dressing room and Donegal dressing room, the Donegal or the Dublin team are absolutely respected amongst their peers, and that it's probably unfair that, you know, their efforts and their achievements sometimes get sort of mashed into the other story in relation to funding and structure and all that. And I think, you know, taking the football element solely on its own merit, you know, I echo exactly what the lads have said in relation to the qualities that they have achieved, and guarantee you that's what's respected for that group in, you know, every dressing room and every training field. And in that, though, that's the challenge. That's what I'll be thinking about when I'm making the trip to Donegal next year, is around how do you stop Conor Callaghan? How do you negate Brian Fenton? How do you take on Mixer Simons? I think, you know, I thought Mixer Simons the last day, even though he was marking David Clifford and then he scored, you know, 4 points in play, I thought Mixer Simons gave an outstanding display, display on how to play his cornerback and his captain. And again, Mick is the other side of 30, so and I don't see what he did the last day means that he'll be packing his bags and not reappearing in 2020. So it's formidable, but in any champion, you know, what we all sort of, I suppose, look to do is try and get them on their weakest day, and when you're looking to perform at your very best. And, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, Kerry and Mayo probably have gotten them in two draws, and probably can look back and say, you know, was that your chance? And maybe it was, and maybe it wasn't. But at the end of the day, Dublin have always been able to sort of recalibrate going into those replays and deliver the killer punch.
With kind of stopping the six in the row, which is now what the conversation that we're going to be having on long into the winter, and Donegal's chances of doing that, like, how daunting is it when you've seen over the last while what they're capable of, Stephen?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I probably wouldn't over it around being daunting. It's definitely challenging. I still believe it can be done, because, you know, sports can throw up different scenarios in games, you know, a sending off and an injury to a key player, and you don't want to see that happening, but you don't know what lies ahead and what opportunities that may bring. We've seen in the past, you know, key players for Dublin, you know, taking a year out to do other things, and they've been able to bring guys in, sure enough. But would there be a case that a number of things sort of rolled up, like maybe some retirements and one or two of those other scenarios, may allow us to sort of, you know, get a little bit a step closer. But invariably, from a coaching perspective, and looking at the talent, even in from a goal perspective, that's what you have to. Dublin are obviously the benchmark, 5-0, and as you said, is you know, within weeks it'll become the 6-0 conversation, and rightly so. That's where the talent is, and each and every time that they've had their back to the wall, they've been able to come out swinging. And but invariably in a context like I see it, that's the challenge, and that's what motivates you.
Ray, there is a conversation as well starting about Jim Gavin's future and also Stephen Cluxton's. But Jim Gavin's first, he had his father in the press conference. He didn't confirm fully that he was staying on. He said he's going to reflect on it. Do you think we're going to see Dublin managed by Jim Gavin now going forward?
Like, Jim is there since 2013. You know, he's had massive success. You know, if you look at some of the other inter-county managers that have hung on for, you know, a long time. You look at Brian Cody, you know, over 20 years. You know, managers can have a long shelf, like as long a shelf like life as they want. Jim can stay in that hot seat for as long as he wishes. I certainly wouldn't be retiring Jim here tonight. You know, he's won 6 All-Irelands, made history. You know, based on games played, you know, he's the most successful manager in the history of the game. You know, does he have the hunger, the appetite to stay at it? That's a question Jim will have to ask himself. You know, reflect on it, see what happens with the rest of the management team. He's got a family, he's got
very demanding job
as well. So yeah, Jim will have plenty to ponder over the next couple of weeks. You know, to walk away from a successful team is a very difficult thing to do as well. So you know, the fear is, you know, you blot the copybook if, you know, things weren't to work out next year. So yeah, it's a very tough question, you know, and only Jim, knowing his personal circumstances, will be able to assess what's the right thing for him to do moving forward. I certainly wouldn't be looking for Jim to move on. You know, he's got that group humming. You know, he's changing the team year in, year out. And he's got a great management team around him and a backroom team that's very big as well. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens over the next couple of months.
Johnny, while Jim does get a huge amount of credit, so much of this has to come from the players. Like, I know it's only a small thing, but we saw Stephen Cluckson sweep in the dressing room in Croke Park. Like, the standards that they set for themselves must be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. What I see is player driven. Clucko and the likes of Flinner and Brenner Brogan, these guys would have been on the tail end of a few hidings from Tyrone and Kerry, would have seen that they need to go to the next level. Clucko led by example. You know, Clucko, we arrived at training probably 45 an hour before training. We would arrive there to try and wind him up and try and get out on the pitch before him, and then he arrived in half an hour even before, so an hour and a half before training. So we see him try to wind him up again and go a little bit earlier. But Clucko, being Clucko, is well driven. And that, I remember speaking with Johnny Cooper before, and I said, how are you getting on, how are you moving? And you know, this was a couple of years ago, and he said, like, Johnny, look, it's player driven, you know. And when you have that kind of capability, and look, myself and Reddy were lucky enough to be successful with Crokes, and that team we were involved in was a very well driven group, you know. And we had our own council within our own setup, you know, away from the manager, and we held each other accountable to what we wanted and the standards that was required for us as a group at the time. And you could see that standard within the group, that they have a certain goal, certain standard, and that if they drop any way off it, that they pick each other up on it. And that's one of probably the benchmarks of why this team has been so successful.
Well, as I said there, 2020 is just around the corner. And one of the things, Stephen, that might be coming in is a two-tier All-Ireland Football Championship. The GAA have moved a step closer. The proposal is going to be voted on at Special Congress next month. As someone who is so involved in the game, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's a really tricky one. I think there's definitely validity in having the debate. It's probably moving a little bit quicker for maybe some of the, you know, the lesser counties that may be associated with the tier two. And my concern only over is that the buy-in won't be there, or that there won't be enough buy-in. I mean, look, Johnny would be a lot closer and experienced maybe from, you know, a Wicklow sense as regards what he feels that the players at that level currently, will they buy into it? Will they use it as a platform to, you know, strive for 4 or 5 years time to get up to whatever is the tier one name or whatever? And I'd like to see it being properly filed and properly platformed to become part of an All-Ireland weekend, and put it up there as something that the players would strive to, and that we don't see the exodus during the provincial championships and teams move out heading for America, or that people can rightly see it as being something that they can build on and move it forward. And I do think, you know, that quite, you know, it's nice to talk about everybody having a chance of winning Sam Maguire. Look at the conversation we just had. You know, you're talking about one team having that, and then maybe two or three teams being able to compete you know, at that level. So, you know, I think there's huge validity in it, and I definitely think it should be trialed, but trialed in a way that allows us to be sort of, you know, bringing everybody together and giving a bit of weight behind it.
Okay, Stephen, thanks for joining us, and best of luck when the new season does roll around.
Lovely, thank you.
Johnny, you were Wicklow manager. Do you think players will want to play in it?
I think some will, but I think there's others that probably won't like it, because it's seen as a second class competition, and you can understand their thought process in that. I think GAA need to kind of not just speak to the county delegates, I think they need to go to the players themselves, you know, say this is what it's going to be, as Stephen said there, give the right platform and roll with it. Because at this stage, you know, myself and Ray experience, you know, where you're training a team for the guts of 10 months and they only get to play 9 games in 10 months and then they don't get to see a football for another, was it 5 months or something like that, you know, before, you know, a quality game again. So, like, it's not fair for the time and effort that they put in. So there has to be a balance. There has to be some sort of, you know, tangible thing for the players to strive to, you know, and that it's good for both parties. But just at this moment of time, yes, the GA are rolling out, but like, have they really spoken to the players that have been in playing Division 4, you know, and have been beaten in the first round of provincials for the last 10 years? You know, I don't think so. Talking to a few lads, you know, when I was involved and then over the last while, you know, they're still pretty, they don't feel they get the respect they deserved, you know. But like, they have to be given the right platform, you know, all this thing about funding and everything else. If is it a case of, compared to Dublin, like, let's fitness test them and let's see where Dublin are at, then fitness test it, say, so a Wicklow team, you know, what do they need to get to that level? What kind of a voice or kind of leadership or what kind of strength condition can we help with them, you know, and then obviously offer them the proper game time for these lads. 9 games in 10 months is like 1 game a month, you know, is ridiculous.
Well, it's something that I think we're going to have a conversation about later in the week, because there's so much to discuss on it. But it's time for a break now, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette, new SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm joined by Alan Cawley to talk Premier League. Alan, another busy weekend of Premier League. I think the standout game was probably Arsenal squandering their lead to bottom of the table, Watford.
It was actually a great game, Ray. I watched it yesterday. A game of two halves, really. Arsenal got off to a great start. 2-0 up, you think they're cruising at half time, but typical Arsenal doing typical Arsenal things in the second half, some crazy stuff. And obviously we mentioned David Luiz a few times, Marie, and if he's the answer, I'm not sure what the question is, to be honest with you, because Arsenal had a lot of problems defensively, obviously, going over not just last year but the previous few seasons. And once Unai Emery came in, I felt he did a good enough job last year, but I was sure he'd try and shore up the defence in some capacity this year, and obviously try and bring in far better quality centre halves than what they had. But you're signing David Luiz, you're just asking for trouble. And between him and Sokratis, they managed to obviously throw away the 2-goal lead between them themselves, and they were just doing crazy things, playing out from the back, and there were so many warning signs before they actually eventually gave it away. Sokratis gave it cleverly and obviously he buried it. Then you have Luiz getting caught square on, the forwards running in, takes him on, he was always going to take him down. And even going back to the chat there with the lads about the Dublin stuff and the accountability that they hold amongst themselves and taking responsibility, you had Luiz, who done something similar a couple of weeks ago against Liverpool, dragging back Salah, and he comes out in a post-match interview and tries to shy away from any blame and take no responsibility whatsoever. Yesterday after the match, he did the exact same thing. He's gone up to the lad that he had taken down to give away the penalty, and he's trying to remonstrate with him almost to say it wasn't my fault, you dived and all. So as I say, like, when you're dealing with the likes of him, you're only asking for trouble, and Arsenal are never going to progress with the likes of him playing their centre defence.
Did you see the interview then with Granit Xhaka after the game? And he said, we were scared. Like, to come out afterwards and to say that they were scared and that nobody wanted the ball, like, what did he even mean by that?
Yeah, it comes back to, I suppose, a lot of the problems with the modern day game I have, because there is no accountability amongst them. There's no leaders on the pitch. Yeah, and you look at that Arsenal team, and Xhaka, a very experienced player. Obviously, we saw him with Switzerland as well throughout the campaign here. But it's almost like they're rudderless, and it's not just them. You look at around other clubs as well, you know, gone are the days where you have the old fashioned leaders and players kind of getting after each other, and it's a part of the game that you miss massively, and I certainly miss it from people. Like, you go back to the Roy Keane days, Vieira, the likes of those players, all that seems to be gone out of the game now, Marie, and for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the world we live in now, and players are sensitive and too soft, but like, if I was the manager and that's what you're dealing with, and Xhaka coming out saying that, you have Luis taking no responsibility and them offering up two goals, we see something similar with Man City, Stones and Otamendi taking chances left, right and centre, and I know it's the way it's gone almost, that everybody wants to play now, but it's almost become fashionable, and if you're not taking part in that, you're kind of out of fashion. But if you're giving away mistakes and goals as easily as some of the clubs are giving away at the moment, and them all trying to play out from the back just to look fashionable, it's absolute madness.
But no, but there's no accountability. But then at the same time, you see Liverpool and you see Mane and Salah having a little bit of a spat because one of them isn't passing the ball to the other. But like, does that not say that it's not almost the opposite to that, that they're demanding it, that they want, they're so competitive that they want to have higher standards almost?
Yeah, and I think it's a good example you make, Marie, because I think when you, they're the two, and the reason is because of the managers, Guardiola and both Klopp. They don't accept mediocrity, and that's the difference. And they demand so much. They're dealing with the best players in the world on their teams, why they're so good. But it doesn't matter what the player is, if they're not delivering, if they're not performing, they'll pull them out. And we saw that with Guardiola only a few weeks ago. Aguero was shaking his head. He was coming off the best centre forward in the league, arguably one of the best that we've ever seen in the game, shaking his head coming off, and Guardiola is ready to take his head off on the sideline, and he doesn't care who you are. Whereas you look at the likes of Solskjaer and Pogba's running all over him, you look at that Luis fella, Emery goes and sign him and he's the same, having no responsibility, and there's examples all over the place. But I think the reason that it's not accepted at those clubs is down to the managers.
Liverpool look good though, don't they? Points clear.
Liverpool are unbelievable, yeah, and they've set, and yeah, the 5 points thing, like, I know it's only early days, but 5 points is 5 points. And when you think of last season, how closely they ran Man City, and both of the teams were relentless, win after win after win, 5 points is a big gap amongst those two. And yeah, Liverpool have been brilliant, and you look at the standards that they've set under Klopp last year, they've kicked on again this year. I think they're nearly even better. And I suppose that man Firmino, I was watching Match of the Day, I was only catching up on it last night because I was at the All-Ireland final, and it's almost come to the point where he's nearly one of their most pivotal players now. Obviously everybody talks about if Van Dijk got injured, and rightly so, or if Salah got injured, but if Firmino got injured now, I think they'd be in major trouble, because if you look at the game on Saturday against Newcastle, he started on the bench for a half an hour. Newcastle obviously took the lead, they were in the game, Origi wasn't doing his stuff, and he's nowhere near the levels of Firmino really, but once Firmino came on after half an hour, changed the whole game, and the goal that he set up for Salah, the 1-2, like,
did you ever do anything like that? Well,
I used to try things like that, Marie. I wasn't bad now. But yeah, it was just amazing, and it's almost playing, he's playing with such a confidence, because there was another example. Robertson gave him a little ball in around the corner and he scooped it over another lad. You go back to the game last week against Arsenal where he did a thing where you almost had to have a look at the replay. Yeah. He scooped it over, I think it was Ceballos, and has a volley. Like, someone mentioned on the telly last night that it's almost like PlayStation football with him, and it is, like, he's playing at such a level. But you also look at the work rate of him as well. He's not just seen as a luxury player, like, they press so high and press so aggressively, and he leads all that from the front as well, doing a lot of the dirty work and the unsung work. So
now,
he's,
I know,
phenomenal.
He's pulling it off, right, he's pulling off all these skills, but like, he must have so much confidence in himself and know that the manager has so much confidence in him as well, to be brave enough to go out and do those things.
Yeah, well, it obviously comes from him, and I think, as I said, they demand so much. But I also think Klopp, especially amongst the top three, with Salah, Mane and Firmino, I think he almost gives them a freedom to just go and express themselves, Maria, once they get into that final third. And you can see that with Firmino, because as you said, the things he's doing on the pitch, it's just phenomenal. And he is a match winner, so of course you're going to allow him. He might mess up one or two, but then the next one he gets, he's going to set up a goal like he did Saturday. And he's that link man, because you look at Robertson and also Trent Arnold, they look to get forward so much, but every ball is fired around the corner into him. His first touch is so good that he brings the runners into play. And yeah, Liverpool are setting a serious standard at the moment.
Yeah, I think he definitely makes them better. And that's all we have time for, Alan. Thanks to all our guests, producer Andrew O'Connor, BCO Andrew Dupere, and Emma Power on sound. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on.
On 2FM. Weekdays from 6.